Okay, Lemon Smokey.
Woo!
Okay.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey guys, welcome to What's Up With
Lily
and Bobby!
Okay, oh my god, first What's Up of the Year 2024! So it's New Year, sweetie. Happy New Year.
New Year, new me.
New Year, old me, older me, much older me.
Slightly older me.
Yeah, much older Bobby. Balder, older, dumber. So we've definitely taken a couple of weeks break. We did have some pretty awesome news from our podcast statistics at the end of last year.
We had a little Spotify wrap for our podcast.
Yeah, like exactly for our podcast. And we are in about 7 or 8 different countries around the world.
Let's go!
Let's go! Unfortunately, only one person per country. But still, it's a start.
Still.
Pretty good.
It'll
good
be
start.
5 by the end of the year.
Yeah. I wanted to say hi to our listener in Japan.
I forgot what hello was.
Oh, yeah.
Konnichiwa.
And we do have one listener in Malawi as well, so I will say.
Mulawanji tilabuino kainu. Same to me.
That means hi, how's it going? It's going well. I actually answered my own question to anybody who actually speaks to Chewa.
Like Dora.
So sorry about that.
Can you find it?
That's about...
It's right there.
It's right there.
How did you know?
Swiper, don't swipe. No, swiper, no swiping. Okay, sorry for all Chichewa speakers out there. Okay, let's get through the New Year's resolutions. Any New Year's resolutions?
Read more.
Read more. Laugh more.
Listen to more music.
Listen to more music. Absorb more creative stuff. Be inspired.
Inspired.
All right, and that brings us neatly to today's episode, episode 14. Episode 13 was about farts, so we thought we'd better elevate our game. We thought we'd better do something a little bit more prestige.
Yes,
we felt like we hit a low. I will say that was Gemma's idea for the fart episode, but...
And I don't think she's listened to it yet.
No, but she did help write it, which was really good. So... As I say, it's to counterbalance the slightly low-end farty podcast we did last year. And to balance the silly one, we've got something really cool and profound. Don't worry, kids. Profound's just a fancy adult word for boring. No, it's not. It's going to be really good. Because today we are talking about heroines. Women in technology. So, what's up with women in technology?
Magical language called code. It helps us talk to computers, find our best suitors, navigate rivers and roads. It helps us fly to the moon. Might help us understand AI soon. Ada Lovelace, Byron's daughter, wrote poetry of a different order. Margaret Hamilton and Lauren wrote the code for Apollo 11. Got us closer to heaven. Got us closer to heaven.
Something like that.
We've had to do a bit of research on this, and we have realized that, in fact, although it's not the case now, women really were the first coders in the world. One woman who we'll talk about who was writing code before there was even hardware, before there was even a computer, she was writing code. She's so amazing.
Legend.
And so, and also women who are part of NASA, who are part of Bletchley Park, which cracked the Enigma code that got rid of nasty Hitler. So we're going to go through some of these incredible unsung heroes who have had such a fundamental impact on technology and everything that we do today, right down to your little apps and your TikToks and your YouTubes and your Instagrams and your...
The thing you're listening off right now.
Tickety-tocks, exactly right. So we really wanted to put some names to these incredible women who made a sort of fundamental impact on technology. And I'm talking about one thing in particular, and that is all of these women who figured out, wrote, created, inspired the magical language that no one speaks, I am talking about coding software. Bits and bobs and bytes and zeros and ones. Bits and bobs and zips and zops. And to be more specific, we are talking about lots of women who've basically gone unrecognized in some places, but they have changed everything that we do. They've been women who have played a major role in sending rockets to the moon and generally making the world work and allowing me to get in a car and figure out where I'm actually going. So with a little bit of research, we've read a couple of books about Ada Lovelace. And a couple of other incredible women. In fact, we'll talk about Ada Lovelace, who basically wrote software before they had hardware. She had a mate called Babbage, who was the first guy to try and build a computer. Mm-hmm. I think he called it something crazy like analytical engine. You can see why it didn't take off. Should have called it an apple. And it was like steampunk. He was building this thing out of steam with valves and screws and nuts and bolts. And Ada Lovelace, who was an incredible woman, figured out how to write software for it, which was connected to how people used to use looms that wove clothes back in the day. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about her a little bit as well. In fact, what I want to actually start with is my general obsession, which is the Apollo moon landings.
We know.
I know we've covered this up a few times.
Let's do it again.
With Voyager and a couple of other things, but it is the most incredible moment of womankind ever. So,
yep.
And in fact, what I've learned is that there was one woman who led and wrote the entire code for the first moon landing. So a woman landed us on the frickin' moon, dude.
That's cool.
Yeah. So this is a story everyone should know, but very few people do know. And there's a lovely little twist in it, which is that her daughter, a child, saved the Apollo moon landings. So it was a kind of combination of mother and daughter. Because together they made this kind of beautiful mistake together. And if they fell fast, figured out a problem, and ultimately it would ensure that the Apollo space mission landed on the moon and came back safe and sound. Do you believe me?
I do.
You do? Many wouldn't. I like the fact that you believe me. So, yeah, this was the first software ever made on a grand scale. It was by a woman, and the woman was called Margaret Hamilton, and she was basically the first person to really create a coded language that made machines do what we wanted them to do. It was called Assembly, and it communicated what we soft, fleshy human beings wanted hard, sharp machines to do, and she did it, and it was pretty insane. It kind of worked by magic. She headed a team of 350 people, mainly men, and they developed the Apollo 11 project. And in fact, she's the first woman who coined the term software engineer to describe her role. It's been described that way ever since, so that's really cool. And she wrote code like Shakespeare. To be or not to be. She took basic text and notes, and like a great jazz player, she actually melded it into something really magical. When she was in NASA, because she was a wife and she didn't have a wife, one day she actually had to bring her daughter to work when it wasn't a bring your daughter to work day. And she would let her daughter, Lauren, play with the flight simulator, which was a simulator that Margaret had created and that all of the astronauts used every day to try and figure out every single eventuality, worst case scenario of what could happen on the flight, so that they could do everything simulated beforehand. And so whilst Lauren was playing with it, she actually did something that no one ever did, which is halfway through one of the simulations, she got the computer to start a launch code. And the computer crashed. And Margaret thought, well, that's really unusual. Like, that would be really dangerous if that actually happened. And so she went to all the astronauts and all the administrators and said, hey, I've had my kid and she's made a bit of a mistake on the simulator. But it's taught me something really important, which is we could potentially be crashing the software if this happens. And they were all men and they all knew what they were talking about. So they said, no, that's rubbish. No astronaut would ever, like, launch the launch code whilst the spaceship is in the air. Mm-hmm. So because they were arrogant, she ignored them, And she wrote a small piece of software anyway, so that if it did actually happen, that they would be able to find a way around it.
Smart.
Yeah, so it was a really smart thing to do. And so interesting that such a fundamental thing happened because of a little kid playing what was basically the first Space Invaders game ever, the first like computer game, the most expensive computer game ever. Probably $1 billion worth of computer game that triggered this thing for the whole thing to actually fail. And so Lauren, the daughter of Margaret Hamilton, triggered this thing called a single point failure, because NASA goes through every single thing that could go wrong. Because they're basically sending three blokes up there in a tin can, so you've got to be really careful. And so when they said, like, you know, the real astronauts would never do this, don't worry about it, you know, they were basically saying, we don't believe you, and also, you know, if it wasn't for those pesky kids, we'd be fine.
Yeah, and we would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those pesky kids.
But she was convinced that there was a problem. And the software that she wrote to get around this problem was called Forget It. Because the men at NASA basically told her it was a pointless piece. So she kind of like did a tongue-in-cheek title for it and said Forget It software. Right up until the real mission. So although they'd said it was nothing that a real astronaut would do, it's exactly what an astronaut did, Lil. And he accidentally triggered the launch code and it stuffed up the system. So they really had to work to reprogram the software whilst the mission was in the air. And they had this crazy thing called the go, no go.
Okay, all flight controllers, go, no go for landing. Retro,
go,
Fido,
go,
guidance,
go,
control.
Go.
And so literally the whole flight mission was nearly cancelled when the computer stalled. Yeah, but Margaret, because of her daughter, knew that that was just something that had happened in the flight simulation. She knew there was a way around it. Mm-hmm. She said, no, you can go. So the mission was actually fine in the end. So the way she did it, and I know I made a joke about jazz, the fact she wrote code like jazz, digital jazz, man.
Biodigital jazz, man.
But she did it in a very clever way, because coding before was done in a linear way. So it was 1 + 2 = 3. It was only worked from ABC. But she figured out a way to do it synchronistically so that two lines of code could work at the same time. And that was a really clever development, and it allowed this breakdown of the software to realize, oh, I'm not launching the mission, I'm in the air, and it allowed them to prioritize a different part of the software.
Smart.
So thank God for Margaret and for Lauren, who made this incredible discovery and led to a terrifying go, no go moment. But actually it all went really well because they managed to get over the error. So, yeah, that's a pretty crazy story.
Very crazy.
Yeah, and that's one woman, one girl, who actually made sure that the mission landed on the moon.
Biodigital jazz. Biodigital jazz.
Yeah. So, I call that the beautiful mistake, because they figured out something, you know, out of a mistake.
Love it.
And the other thing about NASA that I found out was this incredible crew led by a lady called Jeanette Wilson, and she led a group of women called the Sew Sisters. And the Sew Sisters were the women who sewed the spaceship.
Yes.
Yeah, they sewed a canvas around the outside of the spaceship. They sewed some of the software into the framework of the spaceship, and they also sewed Neil Armstrong and all of the astronaut suits.
Yeah.
Can you believe that was sewed?
They're so cool.
They actually sewed those, like, with
thread.
They
just, like, yeah. I mean, like, that's just a crazy job.
Most of the women actually came from companies that made bras. Because bras had this construct where there was rubber and also cotton involved in the sewing, which is a similar way to how you build spacesuits. And so the skills that those women had in the sewing factories was brought into NASA. They made these incredible bras and girdles, and then they transferred that skill into making Neil Armstrong's spacesuit. So Neil Armstrong was basically bouncing around space in a giant bra. Neil Armstrong described the spacesuits as tough, reliable, and almost cuddly, which is quite cute. And the team, the Sew Sisters, said it was an incredible job. I think that they were saying that the suits back then cost $1 million.
Yeah,
and that meant every stitch was as precious as gold. And these women would sew these suits for months on end, and then they would be taken away and they'd be torn and beaten, like the suits would be torn and thrashed and put under conditions that they'd be put on a space mission. Mm-hmm. And then they were given back to the women to say, right, these are the weak points, so you have to redo it. Which is pretty brutal. And they were also taken and they were x-rayed because they were terrified that there'd be a single pin left inside the spacesuit.
Oh,
so they
yes.
had to make sure all that stuff was done. So yeah, there's a lot of women involved in that the most important mission in the entire history of mankind.
Yeah.
It should be a small step for woman, a giant leap for womankind.
Yeah. And bra workers.
Uh-huh. And those bra workers, the Sew Sisters. The movie was called Hidden Figures.
Yes, it is.
That's right. And it focuses on the amazing Catherine Gobble Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson. And they were called computers, those women, because of the skill at calculation. So you've got the Sew Sisters building the suits. You got Margaret and her amazing daughter Lauren, who are messing around with the flight sim.
Yep.
Most expensive game in the entire universe. And then you've got all of these hidden figures in the background who didn't get their dues, but they're hopefully going to get them now because people are rewriting history quickly. Yes. Okay, so I just had to do the moon landing. You know, I'm obsessed with it. But we're going to roll back time now. We're going to use the podcast like a time machine. We're going to roll right back to the 1800s. Ada Lovelace. You love Ada Lovelace.
Yes, always have.
I love her name. And so long before Margaret Hamilton and Lauren and all the women we've discussed before, there was Ada Lovelace, who, it sounds like a made-up character, her name, but it's actually...
Does.
Yeah, and actually her history is ridiculous as well. She, even more romantically and fantastically, Ada Lovelace was the daughter of Byron.
Yes.
You know, Byron's a poet. His real name was George Gordon, which is why he changed his name. Mm-hmm. George Gordon, a.k.a. Lord Byron, a.k.a. the poet who did know it, a.k.a. the romantic rapper. More controversial than Cleopatra. Coming at ya. So, I mean...
Bars for bars.
Basically, people like Byron were the rock and roll hip-hop stars of the 1800s.
Yep.
They were like, kind of, think about Mick Jagger and Frank Ocean combined. And some of his bars were pretty amazing. Here's one from Byron, fresh from the 1800s. Love will find a way through paths where wolves fear to tread. And then there's another one. The heart will break, but broken little. And on.
Now, bars.
That is bars. And you have to think like that, basically, in the form of Frank Ocean would be.
When we two parted in silence and tears, half broken hearted to sever for years.
Anyway, yeah, it was Bobby Ocean sings again. Ada Lovelace was the daughter of this rock and roll star, Byron. And I'm going to say now as well that a huge shout out to Jeanette Winterson. I've just finished her book, 12 Bytes, which is all about really women in technology and AI. And it's so beautifully written. I knew she was a great writer, but this is a really sublime book, well worth a read. And so we're going to read a couple of the quotes from Jeanette's book, 12 Bytes. And so I would welcome you, Lily, to...
Cozy Quote Corner.
Cozy Quote Corner. It's my Frank Ocean version, do you like that? And so she's got this wonderful quote in this book, and it says, at the beginning of the future were two young women. Beginning of the future. I mean, she's amazing. At the beginning of the future were two young women, Mary Shelley and Ada Lovelace. Mary was born in 1797. Ada was born in 1815. Each of these young women tore their way into history in the early years of the Industrial Revolution, the start of the machine age. Both women belong to their own time, as we all do, and both women were flares flung across time, throwing light on the world of the future. Ooh. I mean, geez, Jesus. Drop the mic. Drop the mic, Jeanette Winterson. That was just phenomenal. The whole book's like that. It's just so beautifully written. So, first of all, that's how you write. Secondly, big ups to Jeanette. And it's true. Ada was the first software coder ever before there was even hardware to talk to. That's what's so crazy. And she does this beautiful piece, Jeanette, where she talks about she was a Ada Lovelace was the coder. Mary Shelley was famous because she was Shelley's wife, but more famous because she wrote Frankenstein.
Spooky.
About a man who created life, which is really what we're on the cusp of doing in a way with creating AI at the moment. Mm-hmm. I won't talk about that for the moment. But the story of Frankenstein, the origin story of Frankenstein, the book is famous as well because basically Mary Shelley was hanging out with Byron. He keeps popping up. And also Mary's husband, Shelley. And the story goes that there was like a scary lightning struck evening with thunder and rain. And they were in this beautiful old villa in Italy, chilling, relaxing, maxing, b-balling. When a couple of poets who were up to no good started making trouble in an Italian neighborhood. And so Byron said, let's all write a story, a ghost story together, and we'll see who wins the competition because they couldn't go out and play, basically.
Yeah.
And so because Byron's so rock and roll, he didn't even do it. Didn't even write it. Couldn't be bothered.
Nice one.
But because Mary Shelley is the best, she just went out and smashed it. Won the competition.
Love it.
So the boys went off and got drunk. Mary Shelley wrote the greatest horror of all time that we still read.
Yeah.
Frankenstein. And it's a monster book, of course. Makes it fun. It's also a book about men playing God, creating, you know, life from dull matter. And it's a cautionary tale. It's about being careful what you create. So, yeah, Mary Shelley wrote this wonderful, powerful book. And guess how old she was when she did it, Lily?
How old?
Take a guess.
30.
18.
Huh?
Yeah, she started writing at 18.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so, and if there is a man who inspired Frankenstein, then the doctor is Frankenstein, yeah, who created it. Then, and Mary Shelley hinted at this once she admitted that she wrote the book, because she pretended she didn't to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Then Frankenstein, the doctor, was definitely inspired by Lord Byron.
Lord Byron.
They said of Lord Byron that he was mad, bad, and dangerous to know, which is basically how I live my life, Lily, as you know.
Definitely.
Byron was mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I'm more like dull, sane, and hard to get on the phone.
Well, no one calls you, so.
Stevie calls me sometimes. Shout out to Stevie.
Like once a month.
Yeah, I know. I'm not high on.
Not very,
I'm not high on friends.
He's not very popular.
I'm not very popular.
I'm probably his best friend.
Ah, you are my best friend. You're probably my best friend.
I'm first, and then he's your second best friend.
No favorites. I'm not picking favorites.
Just because it's weird.
My friends, my friends, right? It's a question of quality. I'm not a quantity guy. I don't want lots of confusing stuff going on in my head. Just like 3 to 4. Friends.
Cats don't count.
Cats count. I've got 3 cats.
They don't count.
Anyway, mad, bad, dangerous to know, dull, sane, and hard to get on the phone. So now Ada's mother, who left, yes, Byron because he was mad, crazy, and too rock and roll,
yes,
then tried to persuade Ada not to go into poetry because poetry was considered to be like rock and roll. It was dangerous. It was the devil's music. It's the devil's music. This is America. And so instead she got her into maths, but maths led her beautifully, maybe inevitably, into software. And so she basically was one of the first people to start thinking about the way that you program computers. She met this incredible madman called Babbage. I love his name. Babbage.
Babbage.
Who built the first computer, as we talked about. It's real steampunk, made of nuts and bolts and powered with gas. I mean, it's just insane. So, and he had this, he had this funny quote where he wanted to actually build a computer that recorded sound. But more than that, he wanted to build a computer that recorded all the sound that had ever been heard in the universe.
What?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
So he had this crazy idea, and he said this great quote, but to...
Cozy quote corner.
Cozy quote corner. We're going to keep rushing back and forth into this. He said, this is Charles Babbage, 1837. He said, the air itself is one vast library on whose pages are forever written all that man has ever said or women whispered.
Bars. More bars.
More bars. I'm just a lot of bars, bars on this. I'd say the 1800s.
Bars on bars on bars.
You think it's all about now? You think it's all about Brent Faiyaz, who I went to see the other day because I'm a cool dad.
No need to brag.
Yeah, just dropping names in there. But it's these guys could talk. And they could talk beautifully. Anyway, Babbage was amazing. So he had this crazy idea to have this computer that could somehow like take everything we'd said out of the air, because mm-hmm. He thought that the air would vibrate with all of these things. So imagine the entire history of human speech, every joke, every declaration of love, every angry word, and yes, every fart, captured in the atmosphere of all time. And so Charles had this bizarre, terrifying idea, because you'd have no privacy if that happened,
yes,
to build this insane eavesdropper that just could hear everything. Anyway, luckily for us, that didn't work.
But
he tried to build the an analytical machine instead, which did kind of calculators.
Cool.
So that was really pretty amazing, and Ada Lovelace was a massive part of it. He never actually finished it, but she helped with the coding and wrote some really cool stuff about it.
Yeah.
So this was 1800s. I mean, this was back before tape recorders were even invented, and he was thinking about this crazy eavesdropping machine that would hear everything ever said. I was thinking about it would be quite bad, because we would hear Mum... Or your mum would hear me talking about how jealous I am about how much she loves and stalks Chris Hemsworth. She'd use the eavesdropper, or we'd use the eavesdropper for that. She'd use it on other things. And how she's always on his Instagram, Chris's Instagram account, saying, ooh, Chris is surfing in Bali. And ooh, should we go see Chris in Byron Bay? And ooh, Chris is the greatest man, / genius, / future husband of mine that I've ever known. So I'm glad that the eavesdropper by Babbage wasn't invented, because I don't want to hear any more about Chris Hemsworth, okay?
But we would hear about Emily Blunt and Nigella.
Good. Yeah, good point. So Mum would hear me talking about
my
wife from another life.
My wife.
I love you, Emily Blunt. You're the best. Okay. And Nigella, of course. So Babbage didn't invent that. He invented the difference machine, which was a sort of massive calculator. And him and Ada Lovelace used punch cards. The first time that computers used to have these punch cards, because computers are zeros and ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either a hole, which is punched out, or a hole that isn't. So that's how they used to do binary.
Smart.
And that's actually remained from the 1800s. That's remained the way that computer programmers were programmed until the mid-80s.
Wow.
But yeah, Babbage, like lots of inventors, had this fantastic idea, but he wasn't a very good businessman. He didn't patent it. Let me try that again. He didn't patent it.
Patented.
Do you know what a patent is?
Yes, but
If you remember the lady who invented the fidget spinner? She didn't patent it. That's why you don't remember her. And so she made $0 out of what became a gajillion-dollar industry. If she had patented it, where you send, the drawing schematics of it and say, I'm the person who invented it, and you pay the U.S. government $100, she would own the rights every time someone made it to get a little bit of coin out of that person for a fidget spinner.
So it's just copyright.
It's a kind of copyright for invention.
But, physical.
That's right. And so Babbage didn't patent his punch card idea, and that was terrible, because the punch card system was then patented in 1894 by an American entrepreneur called Herman Hollerith. So many good names in this podcast. And his tabulating machine company eventually became known as IBM. You might have heard of it. IBM. You might have heard of it. It stands for International Business Machines.
International Business Machine.
Could they be any more boring? Could you think of a more boring word than that?
Anyway. It would be something cooler.
Anyway, Ada was thrilled with the punch card idea, and they did great things together, and she wrote this lovely line, which is, the analytical engine, which is Babbage's engine, mm-hmm. weaves algebraic patterns just as the Jacquard moon weaves flowers and leaves.
More bars.
This is just poetry, beautiful poetry. So anyways, first software developer was a woman. It was Ada. She was amazing, and she had a super cool name. Bobby Lovelace. Do you think maybe I should change my name?
I think my name would be cooler. Lily Lovelace.
Lily Lovelace.
Because I read Good Night Stories for Girls or something like that, and it's all just like women just like doing cool stuff.
Yes.
She was the first page, and I would just read her time and time again because my friend had it, but I didn't have it. And every time I went to her house, I'd read it. And I was always thinking, Lily Lovelace, let's do this.
I think your first soul album, that should be your name.
Yeah.
The Lily Lovelace album.
Think of a song first.
Yeah.
I had a teacher called Mrs. Lovelace.
Did you?
I was very jealous of
her. I had a teacher
called... She was really cool.
I'm going to beat that. I had a teacher called Miss Willie.
Yeah, but all your teachers are cool.
I had a Mr. Treblecock.
That was cool. Mr. Allcock.
I've got one that I can't even say because it's a children's podcast, but you know what it is. Miss Willie. I always hoped she'd become the president of the UK or the US.
President Willie.
That would be good. Hilarious. But she was always desperately running around trying to get married because she was trying to get rid of her name.
Yeah.
And for a second in time, she went out with another lovely man who worked with us, or worked with my dad, I think it was, when we lived in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And he was called Mr. Witty. So that if they had combined their names and married, she could have been Mrs. Witty Willie. Hello, my name's Mrs. Witty Willie. And now, this is my daughter, Lily Lovelace.
And this is my daughter.
And this is my son, Bobby Ocean. I think we're going to make a great soul album.
William Witty Willie.
William Witty Willie.
It's got a good name.
That's so good. So, okay, we got scientists. Anyway, Ada is one of the massively amazing unsung heroines of history. And another major moment in history, which is also deeply influenced by the intelligence of women who all went kind of unknown at the time, was when they decoded the Nazi messages for the Enigma. And that was a machine that was run by an amazing man called Alan Turing, which is where the Turing test comes from, which is a test in which if you can't tell that the artificial intelligence light that you're talking to on your computer is a human or not, then it's passed the Turing test.
Ah.
Yeah. So he was a really smart guy, but he used hundreds of really intelligent women to help computate and destroy the code so that at this place called Bletchley Park, which was top secret, so that they could crush that nasty man, Hitler.
Good.
And in fact, it was so secretive that some people who worked at Bletchley Park, who were neighbours, never spoke about it until it was declassified. I think it was 30 years later. Wow. And they found out, like, hey, Lily Lovelace, who's my neighbour, actually worked at Bletchley Park with me, but we worked in different divisions, so I never saw her. And they never talked about it. Yeah. Two people who worked in the same place, but in a different office in it, didn't even know that they worked there.
Could have been carpooling the whole time.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's a really phenomenal thing.
Wow.
And actually, because of Alan Turing and the sheer scale of the computer that he made, I think we have to go to another corner of our podcast called...
Basic facts.
They're so basic in the facts because they're basic facts. Okay, so the Alan Turing machine that was used to break the code in the Second World War by nasty Hitler was full of amazing facts. It filled the size of an enormous room, for a start. It measured 7 foot high by 17 feet wide. It weighed...
5 tons.
It was made out of
2,500 valves
and
100 logic gates and 10,000 resistors.
We don't know what any of those things are, but that's a lot of all of them.
I know what a resistor is from science.
Yeah, that's good. And they were all connected by how many kilometers of wiring?
7 kilometers.
Oh my god. And each colossus, the computer, consisted of 1,500 glass vacuum tubes performing the work which today would be performed by transistors.
Transistors.
So connect that real steampunk stuff to today. Basic facts. iPhone 12 has 11.8 billion transistors.
I'll say that again.
11.8 billion transistors. You've got that in your pocket. Yeah. I think that needs a pause. That's what I've written there. 6 transistors on the 1957 Sony Portable TR-63, but 11.8 billion in your hand right now.
Yeah, that's insane.
And then Jeanette Winston talks about this. She's got this great thing where she says, so what are we doing with the 100,000 times faster processing speeds in our iPhones? Well, mainly playing games. We're smart, but we're still apes.
Pass the banana.
Pass the banana.
She's the best.
Pass the banana.
I'm going to say that when someone says something dumb. That'll be our code for...
We can have a little inside joke with our
pass
gang.
Pass the banana.
If we get Georgia in here and he says something dumb, we'll just be like, pass the banana, and you guys will know what it means. You 5 listeners.
Pretty phenomenal, though, that we've gone from that to 18 billions of transistors. Yeah. What do we use it for?
TikTok, TikTok, and we don't stop. TikTok.
Being on TikTok, we may have a TikTok account soon if I can convince Dad.
No.
Yes.
Just say no.
Just say yes.
Although if it gets us more listeners on our podcast, it could double it. We could get one in Sweden.
Sweden.
I just want one per country. That's all, though. I don't want to get too popular. I'm going to quote from Jeanette again because she is just my superhero at the moment. She said, the brain is the most complex thing in the known universe. It can store the digital equivalent of 2.5 million gigabytes of memory. It has around 100 billion neurons. And 100 trillion synapses. It runs on less power than a light bulb, 10 watts. Its information processing mode is massively parallel. A computer is a lot faster, but at present, computers mostly process information in series, not in parallel, and humans are simultaneous creatures. For all the stodgy failures of our bodies, our minds are moving prisons of light.
Wow.
She's just the best. I'm going to reread that book.
I'll read it after you.
Yeah, I think you should. I mean, it's pretty intense, but I think you'd actually really appreciate it.
I'd like it, I think.
Also, I'm going to finish on the basic facts, but the first, you know when you say a computer has a bug or something's buggy?
Yeah.
A woman discovered the first bug. And do you know what the first bug was?
What?
It was an actual bug.
Oh.
It was a moth stuck in one of the massive mainframe computers in Harvard. So it was a woman called Grace Hopper who pulled a moth out of a malfunctioning computer back in 1947. And she wrote in her notes, first actual case of bug being found. So that was the first time that there was a glitch. And that's where bugs and buggy and debugging and all of the glitches code comes from. There you
it's
go.
Quite funny.
So women not only wrote the most important software in the world, they also corrected and resolved the most important software in the world.
And named, even though they didn't know
it. It's worth saying that although women have played a fundamental role in the history of technology and everything that we do and use, unfortunately the reality is that they are horrendously underrepresented in the industry today.
Yes.
So only 37% roughly of tech startups have a woman on the board. This is from about 2020, but it's probably not that different now.
Mm-hmm.
Software engineers are mostly male.
Yep.
Mostly men who like to watch Game of Thrones.
Nerd.
And I think there's only 20% women, maybe even less.
Oh.
And overall, women make up about 24% of the overall tech workforce. So it's a real shame that they're underrepresented because technology is so fundamental to society now that women need to be shaping it in the same way that men need to be shaping it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those I can't see it, so I can't be it things where women don't see other women in software, and so they maybe don't go into that industry, but they should. We need the next Margaret Hamilton. We need the next Ada Lovelace.
Lily Lovelace.
We need the next Lily Lovelace. And there's just one other really funny example that I found in Jeanette's book, which is that she said, even earlier in time in Britain, the first woman to have worked on a computer, or as a computer, sorry, was called Mary Edwards. During the 1770s, Mary Edwards calculated astronomical positions for the Admiralty, which is just the Navy. Without such information, ships couldn't plot their course. She was responsible for more than half of the positions of all of the boats. But the Admiralty, like the Navy, thought that her husband was doing the calculations.
Of course.
And so when he died, Mary was in the awkward position of having to explain that it was actually her that did it. And graciously, they allowed her to keep working afterwards. So
that's
another
good.
Classic example of some amazing woman behind, you know, the scenes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of the top, the bottom, the fly me to the moon and back again story of women and technology. What do you reckon?
Love it.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's good, and also there's some sad bits in it because obviously I feel like those women should have been given a lot more credit than they got.
Yeah.
But I wanted to finish with this final quote from the book 12 Bytes, in which she said just this great quote. She was talking about you know, inventing worlds and believing in invented worlds. And she said, as someone who makes a living out of inventing worlds and who knows that reading a book has been the key to the lock for so many people across time and space, I believe in inventing worlds. Invent as much as you can, especially yourself. Don't be a prisoner of your own facts. Be the pioneer of your own fiction. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Damn.
So beautiful. Thank you, Jeanette, for that book. Lily, I'm going to make you read it, and then we're going to talk about it incessantly.
Sounds good.
So go and make your dreams reality. Be inspired by these women. Be inspired by their stories. They did incredible things, and they've basically shaped and carved and altered the society in which we live at the moment. So I hope that was an interesting podcast, and I hope that we've got some interesting ones in the future too, Lily Pie.
Yes.
Or Lily Lovelace. We've
got some ideas.
We've got lots and lots of good ideas. So thanks, Lily. I think I dominated that one. I feel sorry for you, but
every few minutes I was like,
but you put in some really good stuff. So
thank you, Bobby.
Do you feel a little bit inspired now to become a super crack coder?
Yeah.
Or a soul singer?
Probably more soul singer than coding, but like either one would be pretty sick.
I'll support both your careers.
I don't think I'm a very 1001 person. But
you could do both. I think your generation's going to do a mix of stuff.
AI makes the soul music. See, that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, but you got to put some soul into the soul music.
Yeah.
That's the one thing AI may never be able to actually do. So get some soul into your soul.
Soul.
That's my favourite music. Yeah. All right, Lily. Yeah. Nice to talk to you. Talk to you soon.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for listening. One person in Malawi, Mulibwanji, Tilbuino, Kaino.
There are three in Seattle.
And our lovely three in Seattle, two of whom I think I know, and our lovely listener in Japan as well. Konnichiwa.
Arigato gozaimasu.
Thanks, everyone. Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Oh,
Siri.
And Siri's just jumped up. Siri, we did not ask you anything, but
wait, did they come
Siri's
up on the Malawian?
Listening. Oh, I tell you what, like Babbage wanted to invent the eavesdropper that heard every.
That's what I was gonna story. Say, but you cut me off.
No, I talk about it like the every. You know, he wanted to invent an eavesdropper
The joke's over now, but I was gonna say
everything that man had said and woman whispered, and actually, we invented it. And what's she called?
Siri or Alexa.
I'm joking. I take that back. This is my opinion. We did potentially invent Babbage's eavesdropper.
We did. Computers.
Crazy.
Phones.
Right. So Siri, hopefully, I wonder if the thing probably picked
it's probably
up Siri recording it. Anyway, Siri's listening. That's all I'm saying. So
that's all you need to know.
I don't mind, but I hope she enjoyed the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, Siri. We have Malawi, Japan,
yes.
Seattle, computer.
In Siri Land.
Siri Land.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Oh.
Could you try again?
We're not talking to you, Siri, but thank you anyway.
Okay.
Where do you actually, Siri, where do you live? What's your country of origin?
He's gone away.
Oh, he's gone away, but he popped up.
Wait, ready.
I want to add him to my podcast countries. Yeah.
Hey, Siri. Where do you live?
Right here, right now. But also all the other places where people talk to me.
Right here, right now.
but if you had to put it down to like a country, where would you say? Oh, hey Siri. What if you had to say you lived in a country, like what country would you say you lived in?
I'd say it again, how I was talking.
Oh.
Because it said
if
dinner.
You had to say that you lived in one particular country.
Hey Siri.
Oh, hey Siri. Oh my god.
Let me do it.
Do you know I'm in technology and I can't even run these things?
Hey Siri.
Hey Siri, you're so fine, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey Siri.
Hey Siri. If you had to live in a country, where would you live?
I don't have a body.
Oh.
You didn't answer the question. Answer the question.
Hey, don't be mean to Siri. Hey Siri. Hey Siri. Can you beatbox for me?
Here's one I've been practicing. Boots and cats and
boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and
cats. Hey Siri. Hey Siri.
Is there something?
Can you rap for me?
Boomatimati. Matey matey. Boomatey matey. May matey matey. Press hold Siri's here. Yeah, that's correct. Go push the button, mate, or say, hey, then my name ain't no sweat. Wherever you're at, well, here I am. Somewhere yet nowhere, weighing 0 kilograms. But push it. Ah, push it. Push it good.
Ah, push it. Push it, push it real good.
And there I am.
I think there's a slight copyright there, Siri, but I loved it. Well done. All right. Well, there's nothing, no better way to finish a software piece than talking to software.
Hey, Siri, can you say thanks for listening to What's Up?
Hey Siri, please say thanks for listening to What's Up with Lily and Bobby.
No problem.
Why isn't he saying it?
I don't know.
Hey Siri, can you quote this?
Huh? I don't have an answer for that. Is there something else I can help with?
No.
No, you're all good. Go have a cup of coffee and have a lovely day.
Thank you. I hope you have a nice day as well.
My day's banging. All right.
Okay, I'll just do a Zuri. I'll just do a Zuri voice. Thank you for listening to Lily and Bobby on What's Up. That's good.
All right. Love you, Lily Lovelace. Talk to you next time.
Love you, Bobby.
Bye, everyone.
Bobby, would you really?
Bye.